I haven't often preached on marriage. And I suppose it's because you wonder how long you have to be married before you've got something of worth to say about it. And there's always a fear that there's somebody sitting there in the pew who knows a little bit more than you do. In fact, that's a fear for most sermons I preach. But four weddings in 4 weeks. Ruth's wedding, 1 week on Saturday. Weddings and marriage have been floating around in my head. The decisions that we make affect our destiny. And nowhere is this more true than the decisions we make in our relationships. The most important relationship decision we make is whether or not we're going to allow Jesus to rule in our lives, whether we're going to have fellowship with him. Because that decision determines our destiny. But I think the second most important relationship decision we make is whether we choose to be married or not. And if we do, who are we going to marry? Choosing who we marry is becoming one of the poorest decisions that we make as a society. More than one in three marriages in Britain are failing, ending in divorce, and we're getting a lot closer to one in two. Now, I know some of you here this morning will be part of that statistic, or at least your family might be. Our family isn't exempt from this. Francis's brother, he's on his second marriage. Francis's sister Anne married Ben. For him, it's third time lucky. Can I just say for the record, I conducted both of those ceremonies, and they've both had more than 20 years. So there's something in it. Are marriages made in heaven? That's the sort of first question I asked. How many of you think God chooses your marriage partner for you? If you're sitting beside your spouse this morning, irrespective of what you say or think, just give me a smile. This might be the first controversial statement I make, but I don't think God does. I don't know if God does choose our marriage partner for us. I don't think the Bible teaches that. I think in the final analysis, it seems to be that we have a huge decision in this. And that's not saying that God stands back at a distance and watches and says nothing. God does give guidance. Francis, not John, not me. You can do better. God will lead us. God will guide us. God will direct us. God gives us principles and guidelines. But in the final analysis, it looks as though many of these decisions, and marriage is one of them, is our decision for better or for worse. I heard about a woman who went to court to get a divorce. And that's what the judge says, but when you married him, you took him for better or for worse. I know she says, but he's a lot worse than what I took him for. There are few pains greater than living with a spouse where the relationship is turned sour. And this is where we get our first proverb this morning. Better a dish of vegetables with love than a fatted calf with hatred. For some of you who have been on holiday, we're looking at some of the proverbs throughout the summer period, and we're loosely throwing them in here to different subjects. One writer on marriage, Neil Warren, describes some of the pitfalls that have contributed to marriage failure today, and I want to look at a few of them this morning. And this is our first fill-in this morning. First fill-in is take it slowly. Take it slowly. I must be getting all old, but I think too many marriages today, folk are rushing in there very quickly. They rush in there to live together. Little time is taking to get to know one another. I just do it for research purposes, but watch Jeremy Kyle for 10 minutes. All it takes. Known each other for 2 months, baby on the way. How was I to know she was £5,000 in debt? And how did I know he was a drug addict? Now, I know these stories are extreme. And I want to say they're getting less and less extreme when you see some couples today. Applying the test of time to a relationship can only result in something good. And I'd like to say this is the fault of youngsters. But I fear that many older couples who are entering marriage, most of them for the second time, seem to be doing it with the same relatively short space of time together. And let me just throw in for the record, statistically, second marriages on average last less than first marriages. Third, less than second, less than first. I wonder if anyone's crazy enough. Fourth, third, second, first. It seems to be the opposite of what we'd think. But the more folk enter marriage, statistically, the shorter the marriage is. So that's the first thing, take it slowly. Second fill-in is don't be in love with being in love. Now, this is not a sexist thing. I don't think this is a man's problem. It tends to be a woman's problem more. And I've seen this quite often. Sometimes you see falling in love is what's going to happen automatically, and that the ideal marriage will come. And marriage is often seen as the answer to many problems. Marriage will end my loneliness. Right? Marriage will give me security. Right? Marriage will give me happiness. But rarely does a union of two broken people in itself mend a relationship. And sometimes falling in love with love can be the worst thing we do. Number three, this is Francis's bugbear. She's not here, so I can say that. You know, get to really know each other. This is our big thing. You know, as I said, Ruth's getting married a week on Saturday. Peter, well, you know, I think Francis has got a timeline for him. However long he's going to go out with any woman, you know, Francis has got it. I don't know what it is. 2 years or whatever. Poor girl. She's not going to stand a chance. Get to know each other. This is a big one. And for me, this is the number one weakness today for couples who are getting married. Often they spend more time planning the wedding than they do planning the marriage. Some couples get married before they've learned how to resolve a conflict. Some couples get married today without having experienced any kind of life crisis. Some couples get married today without having discussed how they're going to deal with money or not, how many children they want or not. Some couples get married today, and I find this hard to believe, before they've discussed with their spouse what happened in the breakdown of their previous marriage. Some couples get married today without discussing their expectations or their fears or their desires or their goals. And many of these factors take time to discuss. And I think the longer they spend getting to know one another, the better chance they've got in answering some of these questions. How did their parents fare in marriage? What have they learned from them? What are they going to carry into their marriage? Or what are they definitely not going to carry into their marriage? Now, checking things out doesn't mean going for a test drive. You don't have to do that. But do you know each other? Do you spend time with one another? Do you know one another's families? They say that if you want to know what your wife is going to look like in 30 years' time, then look at her mother. That nearly called our wedding off. Only kidding, Margaret. I love you. Not getting to know one another, not spending time together, not knowing family backgrounds, isn't stepping out in faith. It's stepping into stupidity. The Living Bible puts this proverb this way: it's stupid to decide before knowing all the facts. This one surprised me. Researchers have concluded that what makes a marriage work in the long term is the number of similarities that couples have. Because quite often we say, oh, opposites attract. And in cases they do. But normally behind the opposites attract, there's a lot of similarities that couples have. And they say this seems to be the thing that keeps marriages longer than others. Better to learn and explore some of these before marriage, rather than find out later on you have little in common. Number four, invite God into your marriage. Proverbs says, the fear of the Lord leads to life. Then one rests content, untouched by trouble. Someone who loves God, wants to follow God, is taking a great risk if they decide to marry somebody who doesn't have any time for God. And I know that when I've said this in the past, many singles have secretly and sometimes not so secretly fumed. This will drastically reduce my choice. You don't know the church I go to. The youngest available man is 70 and he's arthritic. What do I do? This is one of the similarities that I mentioned previously. It's hard to keep Jesus at the center of our lives if the person you're sharing your life with doesn't understand that. And I know that many folk have said, and they've said it to me, that they know what will happen. My faith will rub off on my spouse and they'll come to Jesus. Experience says the opposite happens. Experience today says that rather than the spouse who doesn't know Jesus coming to faith, statistically, it's the Christian person who loses their faith or diminishes their faith. What about those of us who are married? How do we stay in love? Could somebody go and get Francis back? How do we stay in love? Because to be honest, no couple stands out here when they're getting married and they think it's not going to last. I've never had anyone, it's maybe early days yet, I've never had anyone who sort of come to me and said, well, John, can we sort of get this? I'm planning for 5. You know, are you busy in 5 years' time? Because I'll be on to my next one. Could we pencil it in now? Nobody thinks like that. When they stand here and they get married, I think everybody who does it genuinely is hoping that the marriage will last. Most marriages at least start off in some kind of romantic frame. But the reality is this kind of romance is not enough to sustain a marriage today. What's the secret of a long-term marriage? I've got Cupid this morning to give me a wee hand. Filler number 5 is aim to be more godly. Now you'd expect me to say something like that. My job. Aim to be more godly. Even if I wasn't a minister, I would put that as number 1. Why? Because when we unite ourselves to Jesus, there's a whole bag of resources that are there to help us in our marriage. Help me become a better husband. Help you to become a better spouse. Help Francis and I to become a better couple. Now, I'm not suggesting for a minute that Christians and non-Christians can't have a healthy marriage. I know loads of them. But I think God adds a whole new dimension to marriage. When we're connected to God, then it's so much easier to meet the needs of our spouse, to care for them, to love them, to cherish them. And when we can tap into the wisdom of God, then we can literally see things in a different light. But I also want to say the opposite can happen. If we're not connected to God, if we let our relationship with God slip, then it has a knock-on effect on the way we relate to our spouses. There's a connection between spiritual intimacy and relational intimacy. And I think we've got to see that. Filling number 6, aim to be more of a servant. I think many of us have got to look at our attitudes when it comes to servanthood in marriage relationship. It's not me versus her or her versus him. It's us. There's only one question. I think I've only had one question ever when I have talked to prospective married couples, couples getting married, about the vows. And it always comes from the wife. The man, he doesn't seem to bother. I think most of the men would say, can we just say I do now? You know, save all the hassle, that's it, done. No, you can't. It's the wife, prospective wife, asks something about the vow. Who can tell me what it is? Come on, you women, you should know. What's the one thing you've got to check about the vow before you say it? Obey, yeah. It's obeying it. That's what they say. They don't have to have any kind of Christian connection at all. Does it say, are you going to say obey? And some of them, it's not a question. You're not going to say obey. Wives, submit yourself to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Now, preaching on this passage has brought some preachers very close to a lynching. But I want to say the key to this passage has little to do with obeying. The key to this passage is the husband loving. When a wife realizes that the biblical directive for the husband is to love his wife as Christ loves his church, to lay down his life for his wife, then the future's looking a bit brighter. When a wife realizes that the husband is to nurture and care and help his wife become more fully the person she is, more fully to be the person that God has created her to be, then she might be a bit better. When the wife realizes that the high priority of the husband is to serve his wife before himself, to nurture her, to care for her, her interests first, to die to self-will, and if need be, die for her, then I think most wives will take that deal. You see, that's the kind of marriage contract I've been looking for. If you can get a contract like that, you don't need a prenup. That's a great one. It's a practical challenge in that. I think we've got to look, and I think I'm talking to husbands because I'm a husband. Look for one thing each day you can do to serve your wife. Have a wee think. Is there something that you could do for your wife that would help her? Now, can I give husbands a piece of advice here? If you're not used to doing this, you know, don't go full throttle for this. You know, she'll have a heart attack or something, you know, really. She'll wonder what's going on. Yeah. Take this one cannily. One thing that you could do to serve her. Who knows? Take the washing in with a bit of practice. Put the washing out. Tidy line. You know, socks. Tidy line. Tidy line, men. Empty the bins. You know? Let them do that. Replace the toilet roll. What happens with... You know, does anyone have this problem in the houses? You know the wee cardboard thing that you get left? You know, they've got a life of their own. I think they breed. I think they do. You know? And here's one that I just do not get. You know? Men, put the seat down. Put the seat down. I don't know, that's a big one. When a husband learns to serve his wife, the wife learns to serve her husband, then we begin to have not just harmony at home, we begin to see a bit of heaven and earth. We begin to see marriage as God intended it. Number 7 is accept that you're different. We've talked about similarities, but there's also differences. We've got to accept that you're different. I said you're both different people and that your way doesn't have to be the best way. Accept that our mission in life isn't to change our spouse. Because there are things about our spouse that are just them. And different though they may be, we've got to learn to accept and to cherish these differences. I find that most couples, when they come to a wedding and normally for the rehearsal, they're quite nervous, and we run through what they're going to do the next day, and for some of them it's just overwhelming. I remember one poor bride, I had to make it as simple as possible for her. She just had lost it. I said, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I says, it's easy. I says, you've just got to remember three things for a wedding service. It's so easy. This is what we'll do. We're going to walk down the aisle. We can do that. You're then going to stop at the altar, and then we're going to sing a hymn. Can you do that? She says, yeah, I can do that. And I'm happy to say, on the day, she got it right. Because as I led her into the church that day, I could hear her say under her breath, "I'll alter him. I'll alter him. I'll alter him." You've got to learn to cherish our differences. If you've got a husband or wife with different needs, then trying to honour your spouse by satisfying these needs is the best way to go. Honouring your spouse by understanding who they are means we begin to get a meeting of needs. Who makes the first move? Well, you do. It's servanthood. Sometimes you say, I can't respect until I'm cherished, or I can't cherish until I feel respected. Follow the servanthood of Jesus, and Jesus says, you take the first step. Number 8's a practical one for many of us. It's cut back on work, including church work. Most of the time we become disconnected because we're too busy. We don't listen, we don't communicate, we just get on doing our business and we get busier. Max Lucado says this about busyness. He says, the strategy of busyness is deceptive. With the passage of time, he'll infiltrate your heart with fatigue and cover the cross with dust, so you'll be safely out of reach of change. Busyness won't steal your marriage from you. He'll do something far worse. He'll paint it with the familiar coat of drabness. He'll replace evening gowns with bathrobes, nights on the town with evenings in the chair, and romance with routine. Walks won't be taken, games go unplayed, hearts go unnurtured, opportunity for intimacy will go ignored, all because busyness has blinded your eyesight to the wonder of your spouse. I love doing weddings. I love doing weddings. But what gives me just about as much joy is celebrating wedding milestones that couples have. And this seems to be coming sort of back into the church. I remember a couple in Stonehaven. I don't think they're both alive now, Donald and Lordly. They lived just opposite the church. And I remember the day that we celebrated their 52nd years married. And I can still see them leaving the church that Sunday. They left the church hall because they just lived across the road. And I watched them leave. And I saw Donald, a man's man. Put his hand out. And hand in hand, they walked over the road and into their wee house on the corner. That was love. 52 years they'd had together. And they were happy to over the road into their wee house. I don't know about you. For those of us who are married, I don't know what your marriage is like. But that's what I want. I hope that's what you want. She taught her across the road into their wee house. And I know what they did next. They had a wee cup of tea. Amen.